Welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks and Paul Dottino with you this afternoon. P. Dot, how you doing, my friend?
It is a wonderful day. How could I not be doing great?
It is. It's gorgeous outside, but I know how you get around this time because, although I just came out of the lunchroom, a number of the rookies are in there. So the rookies are still around the facility, but this is kind of a lull.
I think today may be the last day that the rookies are here to go through some classwork and some rookie orientation things. Maybe still tomorrow, but I'm not 100% sure. But they're not doing any on-field work. You know, that's over now for the next 6 weeks, and I am in withdrawal over that.
Right.
But, hey, it is what it is.
It is what it is. So I know this is a difficult period of time for you because players are gone. They're on vacation. They're doing what they need to do to kind of get ready for July 28th, and that's when they report again. So we do have a special guest who's going to be joining us on the show today. A lot that we're going to dive into. Some really interesting articles that you pulled up, and one that I pulled up actually this morning, and that is, I guess, the question mark for ESPN asking a lot of their beat reporters, do they feel that the Washington Redskins will win the NFC East? Well, we don't have to dive into it yet. I'm teasing some of the topics.
Yeah.
I'm teasing some of the topics that are coming up. But we're working on getting Mike Westhoff on the line with us. Want to talk to him. There was an interesting article that you sent me, Paul. I'm trying to pull it up here, in regard to the special teams.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting one because they've been talking about tweaking the kickoffs now for a while. They've already done a couple of things with that. Now they're going to bring the ball out to the 25 this year. And now they're talking about another half a dozen proposals. Some of these things, Anita, are really pretty wicked. I mean, no more wedges, no more attack block. I mean, they're talking about some pretty dramatic stuff.
Yeah, so who better to have on than Mike Westhoff? Also will inquire about how he feels the Giants will do in special teams. I mean, because of all the new faces and the excitement around the defensive side of the ball, we've talked a lot about those additions. Obviously, when you have an offense that has Odell Beckham Jr. on it, and then they go out and they draft Sterling Shepard, you know, there's some hefty expectations there and some excitement on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, we really haven't spent a lot of time talking about special teams when it comes to the Giants.
No, and I think, you know, fortunately for them, last season the special teams were really good. I mean, you know, there wasn't a lot to complain about. The punter's done a solid job, and Brad Wing is still continuing to grow and mature, and I'm sure he'll have a better season this year. We know what Josh Brown is. I mean, he's about as good as they get in terms of, you know, kicking a ball. You know, set the Giants' record for consecutive field goals made over the previous two seasons when he bridged them. So, you know, there's really not a problem there. We know that the kick return game, you know, they're not bad in the kick return game. Or the punt return game. I mean, they got Dwayne Harris now who takes care of business with that stuff. So, you know, there's not a lot to talk about in terms of fixing. Now, here's what there is to talk about, though, and I'm curious about what Mike's take is going to be on this. We've talked about the competition at the back end of the Giants' depth chart this year. It's hot and it's heavy. It's going to be that way at the running back position. It's going to be that way at the receiver position, the tight end position, the defensive backs. Hot and heavy competition where special teams are going to be critical. Some of these guys may nudge some of the other guys out just because they can do something on specials. Dante Dion is a great example. The kid, the rookie out of Boise State, the undrafted rookie free agent. That kid, he's got something, but at 5'9", 160, he's strictly a slot corner. Can you carry strictly a slot corner? Well, guess what? If he doesn't play specials, I don't think he can. So he's going to have to show he can do it.
Well, without further ado, let's bring him on. Mike Westhoff, who joins us, one of my favorite people on the planet. Mike, welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you doing this afternoon?
Huh. That's the first time for me, Anita, on Big Blue, that's for sure. but for you, I'm happy. For you, I'm happy to do it, though.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So let's get right to it. I wanted to bring you on. Paul introduced me to an article that's up on USA Today in regard to some of the changes that we are expecting. You know, some obviously we know this year, possibly more next year. And I'm just going to rattle them off for our listeners. Starting the kickoff team from a stationary position at the 35-yard line with no run-up. Mandating 8 players on the return team lineup a set distance closer to the ball, such as in the front of their own 40 or 35, outlawing all wedges, outlawing attack blocks, treating balls like punts if they hit the ground beyond the return line of 40 yards, and eliminating the K-ball. Now, I know that you speak and you are in contact with the league office, and I know they do call you, they do contact you. They so value your insight and your suggestions and how to make special teams and better along with keeping it relevant. So where do you stand on the changes that are about to be made here, Mike?
Well, number one, they haven't exactly adopted those changes yet. They're discussing it and they're thinking about doing it. Every one of them that you just rattled off, with the exception of the not using the K-ball, I presented every single one of them to them 4 years ago. So you're talking to the right guy.
That's why I texted you this morning, Mike. That's why I texted you this morning.
We went in and did it. Ben caught weekend. I went in and presented this as a change, because what's happening at the propensity of returns is dropped so greatly.
Yeah.
And, what we were concerned with, what I was concerned with, is that basically by some of the rule changes, and I'm not opposed to rule changes for safety. What I am opposed for is to just throw it out with no meaningful reason or thought. And what's happened is that the number of plays in special teams in the kicking game has dramatically reduced, My entire career, not counting field goals or PATs, I averaged 22 plays a game. They're down to about 8 or 10 now, 8 or 10. In last year's opening NFL game, the night game where the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots played the Pittsburgh Steelers, to the last year, that game, after New England beat Seattle, there were 6 special teams plays in that game. 6. That's ridiculous. So what we tried to do is to come up with a way that you could still have the return, but kind of turn it into a punt return and eliminate the 40-yard run and collision. So I know I had something to do with it, because I've already talked to Roger Goodell, talked to me about it. I had probably more success, we did, with kickoff returns than anyone in the NFL. I know we did. We absolutely did. And it was extremely violent play. We would double team and trap. That's where we hit so hard, and that's where the collisions came from. Not a wedge, and we didn't have concussions. That's just not true. But nonetheless, there were injuries. So they want to change it. Okay, let's change it. Let's come up with these things, but adapt it. Don't just throw it out. What I want to see is a viable play that coaches have to sit down and draw and become innovative and part of the game. I know for a fact that the New York Jets, had we not been as dynamic a special teams team, and I was so fortunate because I really had a great group of guys, we wouldn't have gone to all those playoff games. We contributed. Were we the major factor? No, but we contributed. I don't want to be part of the team that I can't contribute, and that's what's happening today. So this change is a viable change.
You know, football guys, and rightfully so, talk about how special teams is one-third of the game. Well, if you make too many of the wrong changes, you're right. It does dissipate and water down special teams to where it's not one-third of the game anymore, and you're absolutely right. There are going to be people less and less interested to play it and to do it, and it's going to turn into a mess. The numbers that USA Today is quoting about those kickoff returns, and you talked about the differences, they're saying last season only 41% of kickoffs were returned. Way back when, in 2010, 80% will return. So we've already seen a dramatic difference in what's going on with kickoffs, and that in March, the owners adopted the 25-yard line now as the touchback return point instead of the 20. I mean, let me ask you this, Mike, and look, you're not a doctor and I'm not a doctor, so for the people who say that it's not a safe part of the game, and it's causing a lot of injuries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, how much credence do you put in that, and where do you draw the line between it still needs to be a huge part of the game, but we also know that there may be too much risk? Where do you balance that?
Again, it's a good point. You bring up a very valid point. Again, it's all a matter of, of the contact. most of the head injuries that are occurring, the concussion things, come on tackles. That's the newest statistic. They're from the tackling. Not tackling properly is a big part of that. The way that the game is being played, to don't lead with the head, don't drive the head right in, don't hit your opponent in the head. You can play a great game below the shoulders and above the knee. You can play a great game. And teach things the right way. Teach it the right way. It is a physical game. That's what football is. Can you make it safer? Yes. Do you have to eliminate it? No. You don't have to eliminate it. Eliminate the big 40-yard run if you want to cut back on that. You can make the collisions occur in a tighter proximity. That's okay. That's fine with me. If it were me, I'd kick off from the 25-yard line. You'd have to return every kick if I was running the show, but I would move people up. And I would play the return team. You'd have a 10-yard restraining. Then I would make the return team have 9 guys in the next 10 yards. You have to change one rule. A kickoff that travels over the 50 can be treated like a punt and get away from it. Therefore, you won't have 1,000 little bloop-ups. I just want to have a fair play. I don't have to have people running and smashing. I don't have to have traps. I don't have to have double teams. I'll come up with something else. Here's another question. By eliminating this play, how do you teach a young guy how to play in the National Football League? Where does he get his experience?
Yeah.
The padded practices are cut to nothing.
Yeah.
You don't have it there. Now you've eliminated all these plays. I used to love taking a young kid and teaching them how to tackle, how to block, how to be part of a football team, and then watch them develop into a starter. That was my favorite thing as a coach. Well, now rosters are being configured differently. They're looking at this. They might carry one or two, but they don't carry very many. They'll carry 4 tight ends. They'll carry 6 receivers. Because now the game is changing to that. I think it's being changed for the worse. Go back and think of the great times that the New York Jets had with the Brad Smiths and the Justin Millers and the Leon Washingtons and how they contributed. Now eliminate all that and tell me where the Jets would be.
Mike, let me ask you one other question about the rules changes, or at least the ones that are being proposed. One suggestion that I remember hearing about a year or two ago, and you helped me out if I got this wrong, it had been suggested at one point, I thought, that maybe instead of having kickoffs per se off the tee, that kickoffs actually be treated as punts, where it would be more of a free kick kickoff instead of an actual tee kickoff. First of all, did that gain any traction at all, and what do you think about that idea?
It's been brought up several times. They've actually discussed starting the game with a punt, putting the ball on the 30-yard line and punting it with a regular punting, just like a regular game, punting. It's okay. I don't like it. I just don't like it. I think you could still have the kickoff. You just have to maybe make some adjustments if you want to do that. The other thing people talked about, and I've heard a lot about this, is now with this new rule, the touchback will come to the 25, that teams will now try, this is a really terrible use of this term, try to mortar kick, put the high kick into the corner, and pin you inside down in there and do that. Well, that sounds great, but that's brave talk for a one-eyed fat man. That's a famous line from True Grit, that movie. It's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. First of all, it's not a mortar kick. Mortar kicks are from the 50 after a penalty. So you're asking a guy, the reason there's more touchbacks is because we've taken the kickers, and you said, look, I don't care about placing it in the corner. Just blast it. Run up and blast it, and we'll take whatever happens. Now you're going to take that same kicker from the same spot, tell him, hey, put it over there in the corner at the 4-yard line. We're going to keep him inside the 25. Yeah, good luck. You don't have as good a coverage team. That's the same kicker. You're asking him to do something totally different. How many can do it? You'll see it in the preseason. After that, I know special teams coaches. They're going to blast it in the end zone for a touchback and say, hey, I didn't write the rule. We're starting at the 25. On the other side is bringing it out. If I'm a head coach, I'm looking at my guys and I'm saying, hey, guys, if you don't run that ball past the 25, leave it in the end zone. So the rule will have less plays. It'll have dramatically less plays. That number will even increase. That's the reality. Mm-hmm. The coaches that said they would do this, that sounds great. Yeah, that's till their job's on the line. Then they're going to quit on it. Trust me, that's going to be the truth. So you're going to have less plays. I don't like less plays. I want to alter it, be safe, keep safety in mind. But let's keep this part of the game alive. Let's not make this dramatical change. Concussions in the last 4 years on kicking plays on this kickoff return, 0.04%, 0.04. Come on, guys, play the game.
He is Mike Westhoff. I love your passion whenever we start talking special teams. It's bar none. Joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. So I want to focus the attention on what's going on with the Giants this year, because there's so many battles, position battles that are going to be taking place. One thing Paul and I have been talking about is if ever there was a time you wanted to watch preseason games as a Giants fan, it's this season, because there is so much depth and so much excitement in regard to a lot of the position battles. And as you know, and as Paul and I have been talking about, a lot of those position battles where guys are kind of right on the line, they're right on the cusp, and they're equal in regard to how they contribute to their position, but one might be better at special teams. I mean, kind of talk about how you said that has changed in regard to wide receivers, and I think that's really where it's going to come into play here with the Giants.
Unless that young man is a really, really special contributor on special teams, where he's a return specialist, or he can really cover, maybe cover punts very well, things like that, that role becomes a little bit diminished because you don't have as many plays in it. You just don't. You're just looking at fewer reps. So if that guy's more of a viable contributor, that becomes a tougher matchup. It used to almost automatically go to the better special teams player. Now that's been squeezed just a little bit. But I think with the Giants, from everything I know, wow, if there's a time to be a Giants fan and you get on board and get excited, it's right now after what they've done in the offseason. I think they've had a heck of a year. And they're going to really – they made just one move, in my opinion, with Harrison, with Damon, big snacks. That run defense will automatically just tremendously improve. And you still have the great quarterback. You got some great receivers. Wow, I think this is the if I were a Giant fan, I would be expecting a tremendous amount. I think they did a heck of a job.
You know, one thing you turned me on to, Mike, and I talked about it on the show before, and that is the yards per carry for opposing running backs with snacks on and off the football field. The stat is tremendous.
It's unbelievable. He's really something special. I mean, he dominates. You know, the Jets have had, probably in the last several years, the best run defense in the NFL. I mean, every year, you know, they were right in and right out. Even when Rex struggled and they weren't quite as good, they were still really good there. Well, the one common denominator is the big snacks. He is outstanding. And that will force, teams to have to come out and spread the field and throw. And then now the Giants have a couple pretty good pass rushers. They've improved their defensive secondary. I think they have. And blitzes will become better, and then, of course, they're going to have to outscore Eli and those guys. So it's going to really be – I think this should be a heck of a year for the New York Giants. I would have tremendous expectations, I think. And I like their schedule. I think it's a very solid schedule. You can win with this schedule. You know, the Jets schedule scares me to death, that outfit that they have to play. And they don't have – they sure don't have Eli. They have a marginal quarterback they can't get signed. So, to me, wow, New York Giants, I'd be smoking, anticipating getting ready for that outfit.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you about Dwayne Harris, if I can, for a second, because, obviously your special teams grading and evaluation is of significance all the years that you've been a guru at doing it. I look at Dwayne Harris, and this guy, returns punts, returns kickoffs. He's a gunner on both of the kickoff and the punt return units. And the Giants had to take him off special somewhat last year because they needed him in the receiving core, and it hurt. When you see a guy like that who is a four-tool special teams player, and to me, I don't know that there are a whole lot of those in the league anymore. How much does that make you smile? What kind of value do you put on a guy like that?
No, it's incredible value, and it's a good point you bring up. I used to love to have that kind of guy. I didn't always have that many of them, but I had enough he's in a special category because he is such a good return guy, and then he also is a very good cover guy. That's kind of you don't find those everywhere. I know that they had to take him off a few things when they were banged up, and that's okay because sometimes you got to be able to – you have to realize where you have to sacrifice. I would not take him out of being a punt returner. I think that's one of the most crucial roles in the NFL today. Kickoff returns have been minimized, but punt returns are really there. And teams that are smart are going to quit running the wide field punt return, are going to get the ball, and are going to explode straight up the field. The most penalized play in football is the wide field punt return. I actually had a long talk with Dean Blandino about
that. Wow.
we kind of discussed it. But anyway, this guy's really special. Get him and get that ball and get up the field. I love having a guy like that. He's a weapon. And if you do have to sacrifice him where it's going to be as minimal as possible. Because he's a good football player.
Mike, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it on such short notice. Always fun having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thank you. All right, guys.
You got it. Mike Westhoff joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. I want to remind you the show presented by, of course, DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter the promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings, fantasy sports, free to play. Very interesting. The one biggest thing I'm walking away from talking to Mike Westhoff is, and this is, it's so evident, but I don't think it's discussed enough or if at all, and that is, he's right. The significance of how good you play in special teams not as strong any longer because of the lack of plays. So now instead of saying, okay, well, you know, you have these two guys that are kind of equal at the wide receiver position, how strong do special teams really count if you're talking about maybe only six plays a game?
I've never thought of it that way, but he's right. With the reduction of kickoff returns, that's really where the number is shrinking because mm-hmm. there are still a lot of punts, obviously, you know, teams are getting stopped and they got to kick the ball. But the kickoff return game, you're right. I mean, the way Mike was talking about how they have shrunk in that part of the game so much, that does mean fewer snaps for each one of your special teams guys. So maybe they're still important. Don't get me wrong. They could still be a deciding factor, but maybe not as much. I think you're right. His point was very well taken and something that I really had not considered much of. I also suspect, though, that some individual teams may still value them a little bit more than others. I think in some cases you're going to run into a team that says, okay, you're right, maybe it's not as big a deal, and others who still think, for example, Bill Belichick with the Patriots. Remember, he came out originally, he was a special teams coach, and he's big on special teams, and he's never going to give that up. So I think in some cases it may still hold more water, but it's a great point, certainly one to think about.
Another topic I wanted to talk about on the show today, and that is an article out on ESPN.com, NFC East, should the Redskins be favored to repeat as division champs? Very interesting. And, you know, each beat reporter for ESPN goes through, like, who they think it'll be and their reasons why. Todd Archer with the Cowboys, you know, he thinks the Cowboys are going to win the division. But also feels that the Washington Redskins have improved themselves. I do feel that Josh Doctson was the best wide receiver coming out. There's talk, there's speculation that maybe the Washington Redskins have the best receiving core as a whole, start to finish, whether they carry six guys, seven guys, whatever the case may be. And then also you can say they arguably have one of the best, if not second best, tight end in the league in Jordan Reed.
They're dangerous. So, if Cousins can stay away from the picks, they are very dangerous in the air.
Absolutely. Also, from what I understand, now that RG3 is no longer there, he's in Cleveland trying to win that job against Josh McCown to be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. Kirk Cousins is kind of operating with a different swagger, a different confidence. It's his team now. That kind of drama and uncomfortability is no longer in the locker room, and it has elevated him as more of a leader and a field general for that Washington Redskins team. Obviously, for the Philadelphia Eagles, you know, there's some big question marks there. I find it interesting that, you know, a few of the power rankings that have come out,
right?
A number of power rankings actually have the Eagles higher up than all three, the Giants, the Cowboys, and the Washington Redskins, which is really surprising to me. The whole Sam Bradford thing and how that went down. Granted, yes, Wentz is going to be their quarterback of the future, but not sure exactly, you know, the style of offense that Doug Peterson is going to bring to the equation. Wide receiving core, I don't think the best in the NFC East. Running back situation, DeMarco Murray, he's not there anymore. You know, there's just so many questions for me in regard to that Eagles team. I find that interesting. And, of course, we know with the Giants, and we just heard Mike Westhoff, he said, man, if ever there was a time you wanted to be a Giants fan, it's now. Mm-hmm. You know, we know what they've done on the defensive side of the ball. I think the offensive side of the ball has gotten better. But who do you think? I mean, who are you most frightened of in the NFC East that you feel potentially will give the Giants a run for their money this coming season?
I think all four teams in the division have holes once again, as they have for the last several years, but I do think the division is on the upswing. I think right now you'd have to say the Redskins are the team to beat. I don't think that Cousins is going to have the kind of year he had last season, but if he has anything even close to that, the Redskins are going to be the favorites. Now, that does not mean the Giants can't be the co-favorites, and if everything works out well here, the Giants can't steal a division. They certainly have done enough of great things here that the arrow's pointing up, and there's potential for the Giants to do it. I don't see the Dallas Cowboys doing it. They don't have a pass rush. They don't have a secondary. They've got a quarterback who is as fragile as a piece of glass at Tiffany's. And so as far as I'm concerned, the Dallas Cowboys are the team that's not going to be in this mix.
Interesting. I disagree with you, Paul.
That's okay.
I think you've got a Dallas Cowboys team that arguably has the best offensive line in the NFL. They go out, they draft Ezekiel Elliott. I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with this season. I do agree with you on Tony Romo. I think a big key here is if Tony Romo can stay healthy,
well,
then I think the Cowboys will give the Giants a run for their money. I'm probably more frightened. For me, it's Cowboys, then maybe one tier down Washington, and then maybe two tiers down the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, Philly's hard to predict because, again, you know, they had to rework the roster with the new coaching staff, and Peterson's really new at this, and so you don't know what's going to go on with that. Look, you guys all know I was not a Chip Kelly guy. I said it wouldn't work. I said it would blow up, and that's exactly what happened. I never believed in Philadelphia. I said last year they had the most talent on the 53 in the division, but they would not win it. Well, suffice it to say they didn't. I don't think they're going to win it again this year. But my problem with Dallas is just, what, are they going to bring back Tutul Jones and Randy White and Harvey Martin? They've got no defensive line to speak of, and their corners are not at all any good. So, and Sean Lee, quite frankly, who I'm a huge fan of, he's got a lot of trouble staying healthy. He's like the opposite. Tony Romo's on offense and Sean Lee's on defense. They're terrific players, very, very productive when they can stay on the field. They got bigger injury questions than anybody in the division, although Bradford, of course, with Philly's got a lot of injury questions himself. So to me, it's Washington's division to lose, and the Giants are right there nipping at their heels. That's how I see it.
You can obviously chime in on this conversation out of the NFC East. What's the one team that you're most fearful of to really give the Giants a run for their money and compete to win the division? 201-939-4513. That's how you get on board. Also, you can hit us up on Twitter. That's hashtag Giants Chat. This is from Albert. He says, really, Cowboys? Who's going to pass rush? Washington? ? I feel they benefited from injuries from Cowboys and Giants. Call me crazy.
You know, here's the funny part. We all talk about it being more of a passing league nowadays, but yet, the Dallas Cowboys pass rush has gone away entirely. I mean, they got desperate last year when they brought in Greg Hardy, you know, and that didn't work out so well, did it? They got desperate in the draft when they drafted Gregory. Look how that's worked out, okay? For some strange reason, they have allowed their pass rush to totally deteriorate, and it all started when they let DeMarcus Ware go because they said they couldn't afford him with the salary cap, and he took the big money in Denver. And that was the real big block that they took out of the pass rush. And since then, it has gone right down the tubes. And if this is such a passing league like we talk about, Anita, then how are you supposed to win a division without a pass rush? That's for me, that's it.
Ben has to say, I don't think Philly has the best roster, but we don't beat them regardless of who's coaching, where it's played, or who their QB is.
There's been a hex over the Giants whenever they play Philly now for a number of years. It is what it is. We'll see how that works out this season.
All right, let's head out to your calls. Again, 201-939-4513 if you want to chime in on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's go to Rayvon. He's calling in from Virginia. Rayvon, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing today, Anita?
Hi. Great.
Good. I first want to start off, can you hear me fine?
We're good.
Okay. I first want to start off basically by staying on the topic for today. And just like you said, Paul, it's kind of hard to dismiss Philly because they've had our number for some reason over the years. I don't know why we can't really get through them like we need to. But I don't know. This year I would have to say the Redskins. I hate to say it. I live down here in Virginia. I'm really not sure why they let go of Alfred Morris and didn't re-sign him, and they're relying on Matt Jones. I hope that comes back to bite them right there. And
you know what,
Rayvon?
Kind
of
before you go, before you go,
line. They've done some good things in the draft and actually built the team the way they are supposed to build the team. And they I can't lie, they're looking pretty good. But Paul, I wanted to ask you this question pertaining to the preseason games.
Sure.
You know, I hate the preseason. Like last year, I think the last 2 years, I think, you know, they've been having us playing the Hall of Fame game, and we've had like five preseason games, I recall. I think that was last year. It might have been.
Well, when Strahan went in.
Right. You know, I'm really against that. I understand the purpose of the four preseason games, even though I still don't like that either, but you have to give, you know, you have certain games where the first team guys dress and they go, you know, for
right.
a long amount of time. And then you have the latter games to where you have to give the guys that's on the bubble to make the roster
right.
a chance to make the team and everything. But Victor Cruz coming back from his injury, I really value your opinion and, you know, the things that you the way you think, basically, when it pertains to the Giants and the players and the personnel and everything. And Victor Cruz coming back from the injury, how would you handle that in preseason, you know, as far as letting him come back and play? Would you make him wait until the third and fourth game to dress? Because him being healthy and going into the season, you know, is a lot more important than I think him getting preseason reps and taking a chance with getting re-injured.
Rayvon, first of all, I appreciate the compliment, and I do want to add to you, Matt Jones has fumbleitis, and if the Redskins can't fix that, it's going to be really hard for them to win if he's their featured back. Because
you can't
put the ball on the ground as often as he does and expect to be the guy. So that is one chink in the Redskins' armor for sure offensively, because no matter how well they throw it, if Matt Jones is putting the ball on the ground, it's a problem.
Yes, sir.
So that's first. In terms of your Cruz question, to me, Victor Cruz can do everything that he wants to do now, and that's great, but it's against air. And
right.
until he goes up against competition and somebody gets on his grill and somebody gives him the business inside that first 5 yards in press coverage and is nipping and tugging at him and making him make those moves, until that happens, we can't be sure that Victor Cruz is going to be a productive NFL receiver again. And I'm
right.
just being honest with you. I love what I'm seeing out here. He looked great last August, too. And then look what happened. So what I'm seeing here to this point makes me feel like he's got a chance, okay? And that's all it is.
So you're saying he's got a chance.
I'm saying he's got a chance to be a productive NFL player again.
Right.
But I need to see him. Not only in practice, because we already saw that last year at training camp,
mm-hmm.
I need to see him in preseason games. Now,
right.
to your point, would I need two? Maybe two. Outside chance, maybe three. But even in those three, he's only playing limited for me. But
right.
I need him to be able to, at some point over the course of the preseason, I need him to show me that over all of those games combined, he has run the entire route tree and faced all kinds of coverages and all kinds of opposition resistance, so that I saw him make the move he needs to make against an opponent. Until he does that, I can't be sure as to what he's going to do for the Giants this season. That's my answer to you.
Understandable. Can I make one more point?
Please.
Okay. The other thing basically is, you know, I had a lot of people calling in and, you know, people are frustrated with the depth and the players that we have on the right side of the line. Understandable. You know, it's been the same way for, you know, last year and even before that, basically, we've been building through the draft, getting guys early to try to build the lineup. But I truly think this year, you know, the offense was dynamic. Last year, you know, everybody knows that. They see the receivers. Everybody's on a good page with Eli. The running game has been a problem, and you need to get the running game started because one of Eli's most dangerous weapons in his game is his play action.
Yeah.
If you can give him you know, a little bit of running game and allow him to use his play action and get down the field. Eli's one of the best play action quarterbacks in the game, basically, if you give him that time to do that. And basically what I'm saying is I think McAdoo this year, that people will see something different this year because I think he's bringing back the fullback this year. The addition, I have an older brother that is a Steelers fan. A lot of people may not know about him. They just see the name, and they might have done some research looking at some YouTube stuff or whatever, but I know exactly who Will Johnson is. He's a bruiser in there as far as blocking.
What have I told you, and, Anita? Will Johnson.
Yeah.
He can block.
Yeah, so
he's good.
I think if he's put into the game plan the way I think that, you know, McAdoo is going to use him, it's going to be hard to stop us, man. If he can hit the tight ends and the fullback out the backfield to be able to get, you know, the short yards up the field or what have you, and the receivers get open, I don't know what many teams are going to do to stop us.
Rayvon, I will only say one thing before you go, and thank you so much for the call. The addition of Will Johnson as a blocking tight end with the continuity of the line being together for another season, if they don't add anybody else, and, you know, we've all talked about this for months, but if they don't add anybody else, I do think there is a chance that this line play will be better. How much better? It might just be incremental. But to be able to have a blocking tight end is going to help some. There's no question about that.
So how does this, in regard to Will Johnson, I've been hearing great things. Obviously, I know you've been really high on him since he's arrived. But how does that play in regard to the final roster? Because there is some depth at this tight end position. We talk about Will Tine, what he was able to do last year. You like Lacoste. And then also, how about Nikita? So, you know, if Will Johnson, it sounds to me that you're pretty confident Will Johnson's going to be on this 53-man
yes,
roster.
I am.
So it's going to be a pretty tough decision in regards to the tight end halfback.
I think if they want to go with a four-person mixture, it's either going to have to be three tight ends and a fullback, or it's going to have to be four tight ends. If they want to consider Will Johnson enough of a blocker, because remember, he does play fullback, he does play H-back, he does play inline tight end. He does all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to consider his versatility as a reason to jettison the true fullback position, then they could keep four tight ends. Anyway.
Let's take a look at Twitter in regard to everybody's response in regard to the NFC East. Ben says Redskins didn't beat a winning team last year. They just managed to win the division games at the end of the season.
Yeah, well.
Not a top team. Nathaniel says it's our division to lose, just as it was last year. Don't talk to me about the Washington team.
If Kirk Cousins has a repeat performance like he did last year, that's a hard team to beat. I don't think he's going to, by the way. I mean, I find it very hard to believe that he could put up the same numbers. But he's got weapons. I mean, you heard Anita talk about him before. There are a lot of people he can get the ball to.
That's for sure. Arank says the only team to prevent the Giants from winning is the Giants themselves, health withstanding. Big D talks about the Eagles being a thorn in our side, whether we've been good or bad. Of course, he's talking about the miracle the Meadowlands won.
Well, let me just say this. In terms of the hex, back when the Giants had their run with Tom Coughlin and won their two Super Bowls, there was a nice string there where they owned the hex over the Philadelphia Eagles, and they won like 8 out of 10. And now it's gone the other way. So it's cyclical. It does seem to go that way. I can't explain to you why, but it does. So maybe this is the year the Giants reverse that again, and they're able to start taking control over Philadelphia. You can't just sit there and say, oh, there's a hex. You can't beat this team anymore. It does tend to go in waves.
Before we head back to our phone lines, 201-939-4513, this is interesting. Ben says, honestly, if Cruz can't take a hit in preseason, why would you want him taking the spot of a 53? 2 years to recover from a knee.
Well, that's why you have to find out.
Right. I know.
You agree. He's got to play some.
Some.
You're not going to play him in all four preseason games the whole four quarters. Obviously not.
No.
But he's got to take enough of a sampling to prove to you that he can do what he needs to do.
Let's go to Jerome calling in from Charlotte. Jerome, welcome into Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hi. I want to make a comment about the division. I believe the Giants at worst would be 2-4-2 in the division. if we don't sweep everybody? Would I improve defense? I believe we have a lot of turnovers and give you the ball more. But, Paul, I would love the, your comment on the backup line and how they've been performing and how many of them will we keep.
You talk about the offensive line or the defensive line?
The offensive line.
Okay, the backup offensive lineman to this point, Brett Jones, to me, is the front runner as the backup center at number two. I like Adam Geddes to this point to be the backup swing guard. And there's a kid out of Miami named Shane McDermott, who was a center by trade. You're not going to scream to you? I said University of Miami.
I heard you.
All right, just checking. I don't know if you're sleeping over there. Played for the Miami Hurricanes. And McDermott is a center by trade, but the Giants have used him up and down the line of scrimmage throughout the course of the spring. I think they're looking at him as a jack-of-all-trades who can maybe do a little of everything. If he continues to progress over the course of the camp and the preseason, I think he's got a real chance to make the roster. So those are the three guys that I kind of have my eye on as you look at the offensive lineman depth chart. But the bottom line is, and of course Bobby Hart is kind of in the mix with the starters. We don't know where that's gonna land. We know Bobby Hart's lost 20 to 25 pounds. We know he's working more at tackle right now because they need to coach him up at that spot because he needs work on his technique. That's basically all I can tell you because they're not hitting. And until they hit, there's not much I can do in terms of giving them a grade.
So you say they would keep 9 altogether or 10?
Boy, a lot's going to have to depend on what they do with the defensive backs and what they do with the receivers. You're going to keep 5 receivers or 6. You're going to keep 9 defensive backs. You're going to keep 10. Injuries are going to play a part here. How many defensive linemen are you going to keep? In every case, you're going to have to look to rob Peter to pay Paul. In some instances, it's going to be because you have more depth at one position than the other. In other cases, and the Giants have had this happen several times in the last few years, they've gotten too many guys hurt in the secondary, where they had to wind up keeping extra guys back there, and they had to rob from another position. Now, I would think you're not going to keep less than 9. Could you keep 10? Maybe. I'm not so sure that the backups along the offensive line are so good, though, that you're going to want to keep 10. I suspect it's going to be 9 because there's going to be more quality on the depth chart at other positions. But that would be my suspicion as we speak on June 21st.
Okay, I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Another thing just to add in, I'm hearing great things about Solari, the new offensive line coach, from both the other coaches on this team as well as the players.
Well, wherever he's gone, Green Bay, San Francisco, he's been involved in a lot of teams over the years, a lot of experience, and usually those lines have performed very well. His track record, his resume is strong. And so if for no other reason the Giants decided they wanted a different voice there, okay, fine. He does command immediate respect when he walks into the room because those linemen say, okay, well, let's find out about you. And they look and they say, okay, wow, he coached this guy and this guy and this guy and these lines, and they were good. Maybe he's got something. So I think he did command some immediate respect by his resume. And as we've heard, the players do seem to like his drills. So I think thumbs up.
Let's continue with the calls. We go to Pierre calling in from Dallas. Pierre, welcome in to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Thank you. Hey, I'd like to tell Paul he needs to stop listening to the national media narrative about what's going on in Dallas. It's not about sacks. It's about pass pressure. As quick as these guys getting the ball out of their hand, nobody's getting a whole lot of sacks, okay? It's about putting pressure, moving the guy off his spot. And I think the Cowboys are ahead, one of the teams that are in the forefront of playing smash-mouth football because everybody's passing the ball. Minnesota, Cowboys, there are a few other teams are playing smash-mouth ball. That's playing hard-nosed football, okay? So you can go ahead and count us out. Keep sleeping off. That's fine. We'll take it. We'll ride under the radar, okay?
Okay. No problem. Thanks for calling.
So, yeah, because and all the guys you're talking about, we've lost. All of those guys will be back. They're not lost for the whole season, okay? And Lawrence is not even confirmed to be suspended for four games. They're still waiting on a determination because he was prescribed that medication. It was Adderall that he was on. So he was prescribed that medication. And some of the medication that he failed the drug test was because of a injury that he had the surgery.
I'm gonna ask you a different question because I don't think there's any question that their offense has a tremendous amount of talent on it, and it's backed by one of the top three, at the very worst, top three offensive lines in football. I mean, they got a lot of players there. Defensively, I'm sorry, I just still don't see it. But I'm going to ask you the $100 million question. Tony Romo right now has about as much durability as a wet paper towel. And you're going to tell me that you feel good about Tony Romo being your starting quarterback for 16 games? You really believe that?
Let me ask you a question, Paul. Okay, any quarterback can get hurt.
That's
the name of the game. Listen, that's the name of the game. He just has suffered injuries, just like Roethlisberger has suffered injuries. Nobody's talking about how much of a paper sack he is or a Tiffany piece of glass. He's got every player gets hurt. You play football. That's what happens in football. No player goes out and says, I want to be injured. So, again, guys, you can laugh. You can smile. Go ahead and count us out. Sleep on us. And go ahead and do that.
Okay. Enjoy the season. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, Pierre. It's always fun when an opponent's fan calls into the show, Paul. You don't have to get, all hot and bothered,
Well, I mean,
it's fun. It's fun.
No question. I mean, I think, we all have to try to be realistic about, what the odds are. Here's a great one for you.
Uh-oh.
One of the things that I was taught years and years and years ago, I've been doing this a long time, I was always told, what you want to base your opinion on or your predictions on, if you want to use that word, you look at a team and you say, okay, if I'm pretty confident and pretty sure that this is the level of play that this player is going to give me, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be able to last the whole season, then you put that grade aside and you say, okay, fine, that's kind of a given. And you try to do that for each of your starters on both sides of the ball. Once you do that, then you say, okay, you add it all up, and this is what I can reasonably expect based on the person's injury history and based on the person's production history. Okay?
Okay.
That's a very logical way to approach it. I was taught that a long time ago.
Right.
Well, after that is where you get your own personal prejudices and your rose-colored glasses and all that other stuff kind of goes into the mix. But when you take the core grade or the core test, you've got a problem here with Tony Romo. I mean, this guy's had some serious nasty stuff. They don't know how that collarbone's going to react to the next hit he takes. His durability, injury-wise, to me, that is a very – if you had to go to Vegas – and you had to take odds on him being the first quarterback in the NFC to get hurt, knocked out. He'd be the guy.
So why don't you think Dallas is as concerned as you are?
They don't have a choice.
Yeah, they do.
They're with their cap.
There's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
He's better than anyone that's on their roster right now, Paul.
They got cap problems. They are. Dead fast, committed to Romo. Look, Jerry Jones was even thinking about, for a little time there, bringing in Manziel. Because he knows he's got a big problem with this injury guy in front of him.
I'll take Fitzpatrick over Manziel day of the week.
So would I.
On Sunday.
Goes to show you that Jerry Jones is thinking, like, I don't know if I can play this game with this guy. But he's got no choice now.
See, I disagree with you. I don't think bringing in Manziel is saying that. I think bringing in Manziel, that's a project. That's a project for Jerry. That's not a true viable backup for Tony Romo.
Let me check.
And listen, I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, that's for me. That's the biggest concern in regard to the Cowboys. As Romo goes down, you know, they're going to have the same issues as they had last year.
And like the caller said, though, anybody's quarterback goes down, it's a big problem. But what I'm saying is I can't reasonably and logically expect Tony Romo to play 16 games this year. I just can't. I can't do it. I'm sorry.
And that's fair. That's fair. But keep in mind, he does have the best offensive line in the league.
He does.
And this year, more than likely, he's going to probably have a top five rushing attack with Ezekiel Elliott.
He certainly could. He certainly could.
Let's go to Chris in Rochester. Chris, welcome in.
Hey, Paul and Anita, how you doing today?
Great.
Hi.
Hey, just kind of about the last caller there. You know, in regards to Dallas, for him to say that they're going to fly under the radar, I mean, that's just preposterous. I mean, they're the headlines of every newspaper around, and even when you listen to First Take and Skip Bayless, it gives me a big headache. But for him to say fly under the radar, I mean, that's just far-fetched.
Dallas, by the way, has roughly, according to the NFLPA site this morning, Dallas has approximately $7 million of room under the cap. And that's not going to get it done for Fitzpatrick either, because he wants a hell of a lot more money than that. So they couldn't even bring him in if they wanted to. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I think the second time around we play them, we'll probably end up playing Dak Prescott anyways. I mean, you're right. Romo, I don't see him, you know, staying healthy this year. But, you know, as far as actually the team that I'm most worried about, and it's not even the team that is, I'd say, the best in the division, is actually Philly. And I think the Giants, it's imperative for the Giants to beat Philly in Philly this year, just from the past years of going down there and just, you know, the past 2 years getting as embarrassed as we have. And I think that's going to be the big game to win. It's the Philly road game. You know, if the Giants can overcome that road game, I think that, you know, it'll give them a boost, some confidence in the season, and move forward from there. And what do you think about that? What do you guys think about that Philly game? Even though they might not be the toughest team in the division personally, I think that's probably the biggest road win to win.
We have the schedule up here on the board, and that road game in Philly is the second-to-last game of the season because they finish out in Philly and in Washington. So,
and that's a Thursday night game.
Yeah, but you're talking about two divisional opponents to wrap up the season. I think it would be very, very, very surprising to me if those two games are not critical to the Giants' fate at the end of the year. I mean, look, no one's running away with this division, Giants included. It's not going to happen. Those two games may very well even decide the tiebreaker to win the division. So I think you're right. That Philly game is going to be huge, but I kind of think it kind of goes without saying. I mean, I think you're going to learn more about this Giants team earlier in the year, like when they play Philly at home on November 6th, and then follow it up with home games against Cincinnati and Chicago. Because coming out of the bye week after the London game, that's where the Giants really are going to have to formulate their positioning, whether or not they're going to be in this horse race come the end of December.
Right. You know, just one more quick thing, and this is for you, Paul. Who do you think is going to be our slot starting cornerback September 11th in Dallas?
I still believe in my heart of hearts that Jenkins should be in there. If they're going to open up with three wides, I would put Apple on the outside with DRC, and I would use Jenkins in there. But I would tell you that the guy who has seen most slot reps with the first team in the offseason program has been Trevin Wade. Now, he's inconsistent, but at this point, he seems to have the edge over the other guys. There's going to be a competition in training camp and during the preseason to see who is going to be there week one. I would say right now, I'd probably feel better if I put Jenkins inside with Apple and DRC on the outside. But don't count Wade out because they've given him a lot of opportunities.
Thank you so much for the phone call. But also, Paul, keep in mind, I mean, looking back to last year, how many times did DRC say, "Oh, time out, guys, get me out, get me out"? How many times did and just for a breather?
It happens.
So you know, I know there's going to be a lot. Again, I know there's going to be a lot of talk about Eli Apple. If he doesn't start, will he start at the nickel corner position? Regardless, if he starts, if he doesn't, if he's at nickel, whatever the case may be. Especially, I found it interesting. You know, when we saw him play corner throughout OTAs and minicamp, it was at DRC's position.
Yeah.
So I really feel that, I mean, this is going to be more so, instead of just looking at DRC as your shutdown, you know, your corner on that side, I'm kind of looking at this as this potentially could develop into a tag team corner position between the two of them.
Well, and this is why when we talk about the Giants positions, I still believe that behind offensive line, corner is my second biggest concern going into training camp, Anita, because if you're going to say the top three in any order are DRC and Jenkins and Apple, well, now, Trevin Wade, your fourth. Who's your fifth and who's your sixth?
Yeah, they don't have a lot of depth.
You know, again, Dante Dion, I love the kid so far, but he's only a slot guy. You can't even think about putting him at 5'9", 160 pounds on the outside. That's not going to work. He's a slot guy. So who's six? Who's the sixth corner? Is it Bennett Jackson because he can play safety and corner? Does he win that job?
I think he's going to have to out of necessity.
I mean,
where it stands right now.
It's thin.
Big Blue Kickoff Live, I want to remind you, is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, well, then pick up your cash. It's simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter the promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's end the show on a strong note. Let's bring in Paul from Edison. Paul.
Hello, Anita. Hello, Paul.
Hi.
I'm a first-time caller and a new listener, and I have a Will Johnson question, but before I do, I want you to know that I'll be starting my 59th year as a Giant fan.
Nice.
And great.
As of last December, I was able to get an iPhone for which the Commission for the Blind is training me as I'm blind.
Okay.
The first thing that I learned was to input the Giants app. I don't miss your show. December. It's great, and thank you so much.
Awesome.
But here's my question. In talking about Will Johnson's blocking ability as both a tight end and a fullback.
Yes.
When we look at the roster spots and crunch the numbers, how many running backs, how many tight ends, is it possible they could determine a number but count Will Johnson as one roster spot but utilizing him in both positions?
Well, I think what's going to happen right now, if you had to pin me down, I would say they are more likely to keep four tight ends and no fullbacks, and Johnson would wind up being that swing guy who plays a lot of different positions, H-back, fullback, tight end, in line. He goes about 6'2", 240 pounds, mm-hmm. and he's not afraid to block. In fact, he likes the physicality. He does get into people's grills. That's what he did with the Steelers. You know, they wanted a little more out of the passing game, so he didn't get enough of snaps as I think he would like to have had, and that's why, you know, he came to the Giants as a free agent. He knows that they have a need for a blocker in that spot, and that was attractive to him. And so that would be my hunch right now. Does that mean that it's going to happen? It doesn't mean it. But I would say based on the competition at tight end and the amount of prospects that they have there, I think they're going to be reluctant to trim from there to keep a pure fullback because Johnson has that versatility.
I agree. Who do you see as possibly the odd man out?
Well, it would be Nikita Whitlock if he's the, quote, fullback on this team and they eliminate the spot, then I don't see how he makes it.
Yeah. But he did play well on defensive line.
But the Giants have upgraded their defensive line significantly.
This is true.
And the need to put him over there now seems to have dissipated.
Yeah. I love the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And please continue to participate.
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. This is interesting. It just came up on your Twitter feed. Pro Football Focus, highest graded NFL wide receivers in 2015. Number one, Antonio Brown. Number two, Julio Jones. Number three, Alshon Jeffrey. Number four, A.J. Green. Odell Beckham Jr. is not on that list. Is that surprising to you?
Yeah. Those are the top four that they're giving us on the tweet. They're not giving us any deeper, so I don't know what the rest of the list looks like. I will say their point scores are close, so I don't know. Is Odell like 92.1? Is he 91.1? Is he like right behind? Are we talking about literally splitting hairs here? Because I think, to be honest with you, and you know this, look, you're a fantasy football girl that you are, the splitting hairs of these elite guys, it's almost like, you know, what's the difference? You know, when you're that good, when you're up there on that level, it's like whatever your preference is. Do you like apples or oranges? You know, I mean,
Yeah, but everybody likes to be first, or at least, you know, at least in the conversation, the top three or top five.
Well, you know what? Odell Beckham's made two Pro Bowls in a row, right?
Right.
So does he really need to apologize to anybody for not being on their list?
No, I don't. I'm not saying he should apologize. I'm a little taken back. The Pro Football Focus has Alshon Jeffrey and AJ Green above him. That's all.
I don't know what their grading system is. I don't know what they're basing that on. I would say this. Jeffrey's bigger. You know, I'm sure that, you know, they don't grade measurables in terms of where they put their final score, but, you know, there are probably some people around this league who might want Alshon Jeffrey because of his box and his length and his size. I could understand that. I you know, he's a premier guy, and certainly A.J. Green's a premier guy, right?
I just find it interesting.
It's different.
So are you back tomorrow?
No, I'm not back until Thursday.
Thursday. Okay, so Paul's back Thursday. I'm back Friday. But Big Blue Kickoff Live will continue tomorrow as well. That would mean Lance and John then.
Probably. Right? Or Jeff, but probably John.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay. So we'll roll with that. Stay tuned to Giants.com. As soon as the show's over, Paul and I are going to shoot some videos in regard to fact or fiction and some fun stuff that we're going to do to keep you guys entertained.
Crossfire. Put it up.
Crossfire.
Put it up.
Crossfire. To keep you entertained throughout the month of the end of June and into the month of July. Of course, waiting for the players to come back to get ready for training camp on July 28th. So still a lot more coming your way. Stay tuned to Giants.com and have a great day, everybody.